revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, one of my favorite people, someone who I learn a great deal from every time she's a guest on the show. Her name is Kathy Cook, and she's been working as an integrative health coach since 2014. She's a board-certified holistic nutritionist with the National Association of Nutritional Professionals. Recognizing that many of her clients were doing everything right, yet still suffering from health issues, she realized that many home and work environments were contributing to illness. Seeing dramatic improvements in her own health after limiting radio frequency exposure from Wi-Fi and cell phones, she received training and certification from the International Institute of Building Biology and Ecology, affording her the expertise to evaluate all areas in a person's life that may be contributing to illness. She's originally from Kansas City, but now lives in Idaho, and her website is Home, Whole Home, and Body Health. And Ms. Cook, I want to thank you so much for joining me, because before the show, I was explaining to you that I just had a conversation with a patient about EMF, and I'm seeing a growing number of patients come in with ear issues, ringing, ear pain, and these are the folks that have to use headsets for work, and they can't do their jobs anymore. They've had to take disability, some of them. So even though you can't see it, and I think some quarters poo-poo this, I think it's real. So from your standpoint, are you seeing an uptick in illnesses associated with EMF?
Yes, for sure. So first of all, thank you again for bringing me back and discussing this important topic. It's really great to see this in the medical space that we're having this conversation. And it's very interesting that you bring up that specific example, because that is exactly what got me into this field, is that I had severe tinnitus and only my left ear for over a decade. And within a couple of days of me not using my cell phone, it was gone completely. And so I was not a believer prior to that experience. And then it changed my world. And so absolutely, I think that there is an uptick. You know, I've been doing this work for 8 years, and certainly we are seeing a very large increase in insomnia and anxiety and depression. And I mean, you name it, right? What inflammatory condition is not on the rise? Pretty much all of them. Of course, we can't say 100% that that's only because of our EMF exposure, but we know it's certainly not helping and is a contributing factor.
Well, you know, there's a lot of studies that say that cell phone use and Wi-Fi are not a problem, but I think they're outstripped by the studies now that say that it is an issue. And when we talk about going from 4G to 5G, and I think they're on the table is 6G, is that increasing? Well, I know it increases the power, correct? Let's start with that.
It's actually multifactorial. So it's not as much about the power density as it is about the characteristics of the frequencies. So you have different forms of modulation and carrier waves and different characteristics that can impact the body versus a strictly, say, AM or FM radio, which is a radio frequency, much different than a cell phone call that can send or a cell phone that can use data and download videos. You know, the characteristics of those are completely different. And we suspect that that is what the true causes of this additional burden on the body.
I see. And from our biological standpoint, what makes us so vulnerable to this energy?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, our body is electric. It works on electricity. And we have evolved with the natural frequencies of the earth since all of, you know, human existence. And we have now introduced these non-native fields or human-made frequencies that our body doesn't understand. And so when our cells are trying to communicate primarily through some of our voltage-gated calcium channels or other voltage-gated channels, these calcium ions specifically can get interfered with these non-native frequencies, artificially open up the voltage-gated calcium channels, calcium ions flood in when they shouldn't, and the downstream effect is oxidative stress. So it's actually a fairly simple mechanism when you think about that we've got these electrical forces interacting with our body's own electrical signals, and it's not normal, it's not natural, and then we get this inflammation as a result, and everybody's symptoms will be dependent on, you know, their weak points. So the symptoms can be varied, but it's ultimately because we are in have this influx of these fields that our body has not evolved with and doesn't know what to do with.
So imagine what you just described. That's every system. I mean, the heart comes to mind as one of the probably the most one of the most vulnerable organs since it's electromagnetic. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. we just talked about the ear. What about the brain? What about the reproductive system? Are they also fair game for this?
Absolutely. It's interesting to me when you look at a lot of the research, because you mentioned, you know, before the research is catching up, but what the industry does or deniers like to do is say that, you know, the research showing correlation has been debunked. That's the classic, oh, that's been debunked without looking at it. Well, no, it hasn't been debunked. What the industry is doing is looking at only a couple of parameters. You know, how much heat is absorbed by the body when a cell phone is next to this giant head filled with a liquid solution. It's not looking at the characteristics of what we just talked about, you know, the voltage-gated channels and oxidative stress. However, it's interesting to me that there is some research on sperm quality and cell phone and, you know, the cell phone proximity to sperm and how it can alter the sperm function and quality. And that's one study that I haven't seen the industry try to refute. It seems very clear and very solid on that scientific piece that they don't even refute it. So absolutely, fertility is an issue. We have information about, you know, the blood-brain barrier being compromised from these non-native fields, from a whole host of downstream effects. So exactly what you're saying, there is no system that is left untouched.
I know we have to think about this as an inside and outside protection scheme, right? So I know we've talked in the past about things you can do in terms of your house and shielding and construction and actually looking at, you know, your anything from your sockets, your electrical sockets to the equipment that you're using and you're putting in, you know, in your ears, et cetera. But we didn't talk about nutrition. And I think that's one of the things that we don't think about, because that's we can have a double protection, can't we?
Yeah. I'm glad that you asked that. It's kind of a perfect segue from what we were just discussing with the mechanism of this oxidative stress. And so what can we do to gain resiliency? Because we are going to be exposed to some extent in the world, because we live in, you know, 2026. So we can help our body combat some of this stress by what we eat and or supplements as well. So for example, a magnesium supplement is a very effective calcium channel blocker. So for those of us that have symptoms or we want to help prevent some of that oxidative stress, magnesium can be a great supplement to take. And then as far as diet is concerned, if we're dealing with oxidative stress, of course, we want to think antioxidants. So when we have a diet that is rich in antioxidants, which most people by now know that's going to be some of your deeply pigmented fruits and vegetables, herbs are fantastic. Turmeric, rosemary is a very strong radioprotective herb, the rosmarinic acid. So thinking about whole fresh fruits, deeply pigmented herbs is going to go a long way to boost your antioxidant system to help combat some of that oxidative stress that we would get from the non-native exposure.
So it leads me to ask, do you have to have it in a certain form? Does it have to be raw, or can you actually cook these vegetables and fruits and get the same benefit?
Yeah. I think that it is beneficial to do a combination. So we know that some antioxidants and some phytonutrients are more available when they're cooked, like lycopene, for example, in a tomato. You're not going to absorb, or it's not as readily absorbable in its raw form. When it's cooked and you have a little fat in there, like olive oil, you're going to get much more of that lycopene. Conversely, when we are cooking food, some of those phytonutrients may be changed and not as bioavailable. So I like to think of it as, maybe I'm going to have a salad tonight and I'm going to have some steamed vegetables with my fish or what have you. Mm-hmm. So it's more to me about diversity, and we don't want to get, we don't want to have broccoli every single night and say, well, I'm getting my antioxidants in my broccoli, every single day. Diversity is really important. So we want to try and eat as much of the rainbow as possible. And, Americans, we really get stuck in this. I think it's 12 vegetables that we eat regularly. And I challenge people to go to an Asian grocery store or, a Mexican grocery store or do something different and get a piece of food that you don't know about. Try different things. And it doesn't have to be a lot. You can take a bite here and there. And that diversity is going to be a much bigger umbrella for the whole system and the gut microbiome as well, which is also important for resiliency. So it's really about diversity.
You mentioned the gut microbiome. That's, to me, one of the most underrated and underappreciated organs in the body, right? I mean, that's where the immune system really gets its foundation, and it can be damaged by what we do, what we eat, antibiotic, for example, stress, or some of these non-organic foods that people put in their system, all those additives and pesticides. Is the gut itself one of the protective sites, that it needs to work in order for it to, you get the benefit of everything you're describing?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there is actually some very interesting research on how non-native fields can interrupt the microbiome. And to some degree, it can have just what you're alluding to is a little bit of an antibiotic impact. So it can negatively alter the diversity of the microbiome, which of course then leads to a whole host of other problems. So it is very important, critical. I mean, we can't survive without our bacteria. And so our food choices, very, very important. So glyphosate or some of these other pesticides and herbicides are designed to kill bugs, little bugs. And so when we consume them, what do you think's happening to the even tinier bacteria that's in your gut? It's going to kill some of that bacteria as well. And over time, that leads to a very imbalanced microbiome and superbugs, which can be pretty virulent. So understanding what we are consuming, trying to be as organic as we can. If you can't be fully organic, you can do the dirty, avoid the dirty dozen and go with the clean 15, which is a list that the Environmental Working Group puts out yearly about the dirty dozen is the 12 most heavily sprayed and tested fruits and vegetables for herbicides and pesticides. And then the clean 15, of course, is the cleanest. So spend your money on the clean 15, avoid the dirty dozen. Try to eat as organic where you can. And of course, reducing your EMF exposure as you can.
On that note, let's take our first break because I want to delve into more of the symptoms of what it means to be affected by this. So let's take a first break back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook. And prior to the break, you were doing a wonderful job of giving us an overview of how important it is to watch what we eat and watch what we're surrounded by. And for those who don't know, I mean, I think when people think of being affected by electromagnetic sensitivity, for example, I don't know if people really know what that looks like. What are some of the symptoms? What are the gross symptoms that people come in with? And what are some of the subtle ones?
Yeah. So some of the bigger symptoms, I mean, for a very sensitive person, the most exquisitely sensitive, which we anticipate is about 3% of the population, they're going to be in constant pain. They will say it's like somebody's stabbing them with an ice pick, or, you know, migraines or extreme, almost electrocution type symptoms. That's the most severe. And typically those people have had some pretty significant traumas in their life that are making them extremely sensitive. For, I don't know, say 30% of the population, let's say, we might get headaches. We might have muscle weakness. Heart palpitations is a big one. The tinnitus, like I mentioned, insomnia. Some people might get depression or anxiety. Anxiety is really big. And that's a difficult one because, you know, the world we live in is pretty anxiety provoking. But people aren't making the connection that they're, you know, on their phone for 2 hours scrolling and they're anxious. And it's not only because of the behavior and the blue light, it's because your radio frequency is extremely high when you're scrolling through whatever you're doing. And then some of the more subtle symptoms, something that I experienced was kind of this low-level irritability. Like I was just always kind of cranky and ugh. And when I hardwired my internet and stopped putting my computer on my lap, that completely went away. And I was like, oh, that's why I was so cranky and irritable. And then other people might experience something like worsened PMS symptoms, or, you know, they're just like, you're at the gym and you're just a little bit more aggressive. You know, so it's kind of just, things become just a little bit more edgy and you might not necessarily realize it.
So can you imagine how many people are being misdiagnosed and put on all these meds to mask the symptom or treat the symptom, but they're not getting to the root cause? It's almost like every physician should ask their patient to take a holiday from their laptop and their cell phone and see if their symptoms go away. And that could do wonders for the amount of meds that are get doled out.
I think about that constantly. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have if it wasn't so obvious to me when, you know, if for some reason I have to work on my laptop because I'm traveling or, you know, and I can't plug in my external keyboard or what have you. I mean, I notice it within about 20 minutes. Oh, there's that irritability. It's so clear. But people that are doing it all the time, You just can't make that connection. So yes, but all the people on antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds or anti-inflammatories, it's really heartbreaking to me. And I get pretty riled up about it because the answer could be so easy. But like you're saying, most physicians aren't as aware about this topic as you are. And they're missing it. And it's tough to watch.
And also the segue would be the young children, right? I wonder how much ADHD and autism symptoms, you know, what do you call the spectrum, is actually their exposure, because it's younger and younger. I mean, you see these kids in their bassinets with, what do you call, iPads strapped to it. It's crazy. I can't even, nobody plays with blocks anymore. They have some sort of electronic device Their little skulls are thinner. I mean, they're much more sensitive to this, I would think, than an adult would be.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. The explosion of behavior issues or ADHD, you know, the spectrum disorders, there's I have no doubt that this plays a factor. Of course, there's many things. But one thing that a lot of people aren't thinking of is I'll see a pregnant mom with her, you know, beautiful round belly, and she's scrolling on her phone with the phone on top of her belly, or, you know, and obviously I'm not trying to judge anybody. I know we're all doing the best we can, but a lot of us aren't thinking about it. So we're kind of setting up our kids in utero sometimes because they're getting exposed already. And then when the baby's born and they're using some of these sensors, the owlet is one that comes to mind, you know, little booties that you can monitor the baby's heart rate and respiration, you know, it's crazy to me. There's mats that they can sleep on. It's just really disturbing. So I definitely think that there's a strong correlation there.
So let's talk about strategy then. From the standpoint, you mentioned putting your laptop on your lap. Is there a way to, how much radiation are you exposing yourself to? And I assume it's a direct connection. It's going straight down towards the ground through you and your belly and your reproductive organs, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yes. And the interesting thing is it's not only the radio frequency. So if you're connected to the internet, well, if you've got Wi-Fi on and the computer's on Wi-Fi, you're getting this radio frequency coming out typically where the antenna is. So I don't know where the antenna is. Maybe it's, you know, on the screen, maybe it's below, and it's going to emit out in that direction. But you've also got a magnetic field, an electric field, and dirty electricity. So laptops have all the fields pretty high. So you are getting a very intense exposure from all four of those fields, just like you said, on your body, through your reproductive organs. And I mean, it's a real hazard. What I prefer is, like, I'm talking to you right now through my hardwired computer that is about 2 feet from me. And I have a plugged in keyboard that I can type on the keyboard all day long, and I'm not putting my hands on the laptop. So I'm not even touching the laptop. If for some reason somebody has to use the laptop close to them, you can get a pad that you put underneath it that will deflect some of those fields back away from your lap, which at least it is, you know, helping to protect your reproductive organs and your bones. You know, it's not the best, but at a minimum, I would do that. Preferably we would have it at a distance.
And is 2 feet a safer distance? I mean, or should it be further away?
Well, it's going to depend on a couple of factors. So each computer is different. When I measure mine, 2 feet is fine. It's perfectly good for me. Now, an exquisitely sensitive person, they might not be able to handle that. For the large majority of the population who just wants to be proactive and isn't necessarily having really aggressive symptoms, 2 feet's a pretty good distance.
Got you. And should you get one of those EMF detectors to really kind of map out your room? And
I think so, for sure. They can be a little bit difficult to learn how to use, especially because there are four different fields. And you're going to want to know how to measure each field individually and what the numbers mean. So this is also an example where, you know, my professional equipment, which each meter is a couple thousand dollars, the sensitivity of that is completely different than a meter that most of us would buy for, say, $200. So it's not really practical for somebody, you know, to buy the professional equipment. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest either reaching out to a building biologist and getting an inspection. A really savvy person that really wants to dive in and learn how to use it. There's so much good information online to teach you how to do that. So yes, you would want a meter. And as far as recommendations go for that, it's going to kind of depend on your budget, you know, how much you really want to learn how technical you want to get and how sensitive you are.
That's a good point. I mean, to me, if you can be proactive before anything starts to give or break down, that would be the way to go about it. I mean, these we don't think about these technologies as you're holding a radiation device in your hand, or God forbid you put it in your bra or in your pocket. Well, nobody thinks about it that way. And it's just the speed and the convenience. But should there be, I know it's a loaded question, but should there be some sort of warning? Like you have cigarette warnings, you have alcohol warnings. Should there be one, do you think, for radiation emitting devices like a cell phone? I mean, it's just getting more powerful, not to mention more expensive. But I mean, it's super, super powerful, very sophisticated now.
There is actually a warning in your cell phone manual when you get it. Yeah. And it says that you're not supposed to hold it, what is it, within 2 centimeters of your body? I have to look that up exactly. I forget the exact measurement. But it says that. Don't hold it next to your body. And I don't, for the life of me, understand how are you supposed to use it if you can't hold it? But that's kind of how they get away with the legality of it, is if they're going to get sued because somebody has a brain tumor, they're going to say, well, you didn't follow the directions in your manual.
That is something. Yeah. You know, there's like it's a tome, the book, and it's probably tucked in on all the legalese.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a headache by the time you reach that point, and no one's paying attention to that. I mean, we have seen an increase from a medical standpoint in tumors in the head, whether they be acoustic neuromas or cancerous, breast cancer, colon cancer. Those have gone up dramatically, especially in the younger group, where there's no reason for a 20-year-old to have colon cancer. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. That is so disturbing. And that's when, you know, I would want to ask that patient, where did you keep your phone?
Mm-hmm.
I have a colleague who tells a story about a similar active, healthy 20-year-old client who was hiking one day and jumped off a rock and completely shattered their thigh bone, mm-hmm. or what, the socket that completely came out of the socket. And everyone was totally stumped. Like, how does this happen to a healthy 20-year-old? And, you know, coincidentally he kept his phone in his pocket right there on that hip. So, you know, of course, again, like we don't know if that's causation, but it's pretty strong to me if a 20-year-old is having that kind of an issue.
I would agree. I mean, we're seeing more disease and catastrophic illness in younger people like we've never seen. You know, it's just something's changed. And the only thing that really worldwide is all of these towers and all of this EMF, which is like a smog at this point. I mean, how do you even escape it? Even if you go out to the wilderness, can you really get away from it at this point?
It is hard, especially with the satellites. But, you know, there are places in the wilderness that you can get away from it. And at this point, it's more about managing what's in your home. And I really want people to grasp that idea, because this is a concern that I get almost every day. People will tell me there's no point. It's everywhere. I can see my neighbor's router on my phone or on my computer. Mm-hmm. It's pointless. But that's not true. If you can control what's in your house, you're going to reduce your exposure by a significant amount, even though you can barely pick up the radio frequency signal from your neighbor's router, does not mean that the strength is what it appears on your computer screen. This is all about the inverse square law and the little bit of distance you get away from the source, the exponential decline in power density you will get. So if you are managing the router in your home and your cell phone, you can easily reduce your overall exposure by 95%. So that's what matters, because we're spending the most amount of time in our house. We manage that, and then we have more resiliency when we go out in the world. So we can do a lot. People just need to put, you know, commit to doing a little bit of effort to get there.
Well, let's take our second break because I want to delve into that. I mean, it sounds like if you can just do a few mindful things, you're going to help yourself. So on that note, let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook, and you can go to her website, wholehomeandbodyhealth.com. And there she has a wealth of information. You also still do consults, right? You have a whole business that help people, whether building their homes or they have a home and they want to try to make it resilient. You're the person they need to call, right?
Yeah, I do a lot of consulting, both with the EMF and the air quality. A lot of people are calling me for mold related issues these days. That is also something that has really exploded in the last 10, 20 years. And, we often consider the fact that it has exploded along with our increase in EMF. And is there a correlation there? Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything that we're talking about and how biologics, our body and other biologics are impacted by these frequencies. A lot of people do think that the mold is more aggressive and more virulent today because of the widespread EMF exposure that we have.
That's a really good point. I actually, again, had a patient who had mold toxicity and her home was inundated and it changed her personality. Not only did she have headaches, but she was a different person, just personality completely not her. And it was tragic because she had to move. It was just so overwhelming. I tried to talk to her about watching her Wi-Fi use and that sort of thing. And what do you think? Is there some sort of, I know we've had a conversation in the past about how they kind of feed off each other. It expands the growth of mold. Does it not? Does it make it more toxic that way?
Well, so I think the research is a little lacking on that to say with, you know, very much certainty. There have been a few studies that suggest that at certain frequencies, it can make it grow more rapidly and at different frequencies, it can actually suppress it. So there's definitely some interaction and there's countless variables, the different mold types, the substrate it's on, you know, the different types of frequencies, we're going to have a lot of variation, but it does seem pretty clear that they are interacting. And it's probably not, you know, in the good way that we want it. So the other thing that's very interesting to me is my most sensitive EMF clients have had significant mold exposures, just like your client has. And you're right. It can completely change their personality. It can cause rage, cause confusion. It can cause dementia-like symptoms. So if you're dealing with mold, I mean, it's very difficult for me to see somebody try to deal with the mold and not also address their EMF.
So let's segue then to strategies. You mentioned the router. That's one of the major players, is it not?
The router and the cell phone. Yep.
When I first got my new router, I knew that there was a setting that it became a hotspot for anybody driving by. And I ended up turning that off because it was crazy. First of all, you're paying for someone else to get free Wi-Fi. Number two, I'm sure that probably would have exposed, or I'm asking, would have exposed me to more radiation because of its constant, always being pinged. Mm-hmm. Is that something?
Yeah, yes, it is. So we've got several different, different things on our computers or our devices. You can have Bluetooth, you can have Wi-Fi, you can have cell service, you can have GPS, you can have like the Find My function, you know, turn on a certain antenna so that if you lose it, you can find it. So all of those are going to compound on each other for the exposure that you're getting. And they have different characteristics as well. So with my clients, I tell somebody, well, if they have to use their phone for, I don't know, they have to get a call because they have children or something, we'll turn off all the rest of the stuff at least. You know, you can have the cell data on because you have to get a call. But if you turn off the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth and the Find My function and everything else, you're dramatically reducing your overall exposure.
So there's no reason to have to run them all at the same time, really.
Absolutely not. I mean, I don't use Bluetooth for anything. You know, I just feel like that, unless maybe you have a continuous glucose monitor or, you know, a medical device, that's really the only thing I can agree that is an important feature. But Bluetooth, we don't need it for anything. You don't need both Wi-Fi and cell service on at the same time because you're doing the same things with them. So yeah, we just, you know, turn off the things that you're not using and it's going to, you know, be a great improvement.
So if you had to pick the Wi-Fi versus the cellular signal, would you turn off the Wi-Fi then? Is that correct?
Possibly. It's a little bit dependent on the situation, but let's say you have, you know, adequate cell service and the Wi-Fi, they're the same. Mm-hmm. I would probably go to cell service because the Wi-Fi is going to be emitting constantly, whereas the cell service will kind of ping every 30 seconds or so when you're not using it. Mm-hmm. So it's potential to have a little bit less frequency there. However, if you don't have a good cell signal, the phone is going to work a lot harder when you are using it. And in that case, the Wi-Fi might be slightly better.
Okay. So you want all those bars to be lit up.
Yeah.
Where you turn off that Wi-Fi.
Right.
And from the standpoint of Ethernet versus Wi-Fi, I ended up after our first show together, I landlined everything.
Awesome. That's great. That's great.
My iPad. I tell my patients this, it's actually faster and safer probably because it's not your information isn't going over this cloud. Can you explain to folks why the Ethernet is so important?
Yeah, it is faster. It's more secure. It's more reliable. So, so what we're doing, I mean, 10, 15 maybe years ago now, we were all wired. You know, it hasn't been that long that we've primarily been using Wi-Fi. We were just plugged into the wall and that's how we use the internet. It's really easy to do. You know, all you got to do is put an Ethernet cord on the back of your router and then put the other end into your computer and you're wired. You know, there's a few more steps to it, like turning off the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth on your computer. You know, we could get into the whole grounding the Ethernet and all of that, but that's fairly complicated. But once you do that, and then you tell your router, I don't need the Wi-Fi, I'm only using a hardwired connection, you don't have any radio frequency in the air. And it's amazing. And, you know, that alone is, it's such a dramatic, if everybody could do just that, we would be in such a better place. And I would also say that kind of spills over to your behaviors. Because now that my computer is stationary because it's wired, I'm not going to walk all over the house with it and be on my screen as much as humanly possible because I have to actually get up, you know, go away from it to go have dinner and have a conversation with someone, you know, feed the cat, whatever. And those breaks are great and very needed. We really could improve our lives a lot if we stepped away from our screens a little more.
So if it's toxic as you're using it, and that's another segue. When you're stepping away from it, is that a recovery period? So you have more recovery, less exposure, and so it's less toxic from that standpoint?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there are times, like I was mentioning, I travel a lot for my inspections, and there's a lot of times I'm in an airport or, you know, I'm in a hotel and I have to get online to do something. And I will jump on for a couple of minutes, as little as needed, and then shut it down. And that's a big difference than having it on 24/7 and getting that exposure constantly. And I can notice in how I feel if for some reason I have to use it for more than I like, my body has a threshold. So I have some exposure and I'm okay. And then, oh, there it is. The irritability, the tinnitus, it's all back. So yes, any reduction is worth achieving.
With that in mind, then, those folks who keep their phone on at their bedside, not a good idea.
Not at all. No.
And what about the beds that are smart beds? I can't even imagine that is an issue.
Those can be so horrible. Not only because they've got radio frequency blasting you all night long, but they're almost always metal and they plug in. So you've got this huge electric field coming from them. Mm-hmm. And you've got the radio frequency. And I just don't know. It's like a hard no for me. And I've got plenty of clients who, after they figured that out or after we tested their house, they just unplug it. And they're like, oh, of course, I'm sleeping so much better.
So I wonder now, with insomnia and all these sleep deprivation issues, I mean, sleep is a big issue now for everybody almost. That would be do wonders, I would think, to get you into REM and deep sleep and undisturbed so you can actually reset again. I think that would probably help your body heal from whatever assault it experiences during the day.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because for me, sometimes I don't know if I'm overly exposed until I lay down at night and try to go to bed. And then I'm like, oh, I can see these lights flashing behind my eyes, or I'm wired, you know, like I don't know, like, especially if I'm in a house on a long inspection and they got a lot going on, I might feel fine. But then when I try to sleep, it's not happening. So it can be cumulative like that and pretty tricky. And of course, who's going to make that connection again? You know, kind of circling back to what we were first talking about, understanding the symptoms. It took me about 10 years to figure out what was happening with me. And so it's very clear now. But yeah, that cumulative effect can be pretty tricky.
And going back to kids again and teens, the folks who are gamers, is there any way to make their setup safer?
For sure. And, you know, a lot of gamers love to be hardwired because it's so much faster. Oh. Most of them are. So that's great. Let's do that. And then if you have an external keyboard, if you're a gamer, you may have a tower computer versus a laptop. But whatever, if you're using a laptop, use an external computer, keyboard and mouse, so you don't have to put your hands onto the laptop itself. And then I would really love it if people use a wired headset that you plug into the computer, because these Bluetooth headsets or earbuds are, I mean, thinking about the magnetic resonance that goes through your brain because the earbuds communicate to each other is just mind-boggling to me. So yeah, if you just pretty much go wired with all the things, it's going to be so much better.
Okay. On that note, let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook. And Ms. Cook, how can people, again, reach your website? And if they want to use your services, how can they contact you?
Yeah, so the website is Whole Home and Body Health. I've got an Instagram page, which is pretty active with tons of tips on both air quality and EMF. It's, you know, same Whole Home and Body Health. And I've got my phone number and email on both of those places that if, you know, anybody could call me, shoot me a text, you know, that is wired, of course, and email me, and I always respond to every inquiry.
That's great. I just think what you do is such a service, and, you know, you're about keeping people healthy. I mean, if people learn how to do this, they have agency over their health in a way that I don't think they have in any other way. And then you add in what you're putting into your body in terms of what you choose to eat. You know, I want to see, I mean, I'm a doctor, but I want to see my patients healthy. I don't want to see them coming in. I want to be able to have the ability to stay healthy. what you do is, in terms of your home and everything, it's just amazing. Now, for people who are living in apartments, and that's a little bit different because they don't have as much power over how they're over their situation in the building. Mm-hmm. How do they make their units healthy for them, especially if they live in apartments that have mold or sorts of things?
Yeah, the apartments are pretty tricky. So when it comes to EMF, you know, they can still wire their own internet. Well, that's not entirely true. It depends. So some apartment buildings may have kind of a joined router for different apartments, and that you can't really do much about. If you do have your own router, definitely you can hardwire that. And really, this would be the time to hire a professional that can adequately identify what you're dealing with and then give you strong solutions about how to potentially shield. So maybe it's sleeping in a bed canopy, or I will sometimes use metal screening like aluminum window screen or heavy duty foil to shield a wall from an adjoining neighbor because their router's on the opposite side or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, guessing in that scenario isn't that good. You definitely want to meter and or hire somebody so that you can truly narrow down what the sources are and how to deal with those. It's a pretty tricky one, but a bed canopy typically can work pretty well, even if you can't hire somebody, because we know that they are very effective and they work very well. And as far as the air quality goes, boy, that's a tough one too, because you can't control what anybody else is doing. So at a minimum, what I typically recommend is that people have windows open when they can. There's a whole lot of people in the world that never open a window and don't get in that fresh air, which I think is a shame. So doing that plus having an air filter, I think, is one of the best things you can do. And if you do have access to your air handler or your furnace, sometimes they are right in the apartment. Mm-hmm. You need to make sure that you're changing your air filter. I have seen apartments where the air filters haven't been changed in years. So changing the air filter can also be a big improvement.
Is it cost effective to get one of those UV air filter for your air conditioning unit?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question, and that is debated among air quality professionals. So what we know is when you add technology like the UV lights, you can have unwanted chemistry. Some of these systems will unintentionally create ozone or formaldehyde because you've got new chemical reactions happening that we can't always anticipate because we don't know what the chemicals are in your house already. So they can negatively impact your air quality. However, I've certainly had clients over the years that say, hey, I installed this UV light and the air smells better to me. I feel better. You know, I don't get as much brain fog. So that's great. Like, I love that. But it's a little tricky to recommend it because I don't know what kind of reaction is going to happen in your house.
I see. So the last question, I know we're coming to the end of the show, but I have to ask about these things like harmonizers, mm-hmm. which are coming. I mean, you see them a lot, and, you know, wearables that you can shield your heart and those sorts of things, or put them on your earbuds or your headphones. Do they actually work? And is that something you recommend people add?
Yeah, that I get this question probably every day. This is another situation where we don't really know. They do not change our meters. So if you have a device, if you're wearing a necklace, if you've got some of these devices, that a pyramid that sits in the room or whatever, and you put that near your computer or your phone, our meters do not change. And it's a pretty aggravating to me because when I will see the marketing from these companies, they will show something different. they will show a meter in front of their device and the readings go away. That's not accurate. I don't know exactly what they're doing, but I've tested those exact same pieces of equipment with my professional meters and they do not change. So people really need to understand that some of these marketing tactics are not very genuine or honest. So the fields are still there. And what they claim, what the manufacturers claim, is that it changes the characteristics of the fields to be more biocompatible mm-hmm. with your body and less dangerous. Now, I can't confirm that with my equipment. So sometimes they might use kinesiology or live blood cell analysis as their confirmation. I mean, I like those tools, but they can also be influenced by what we're thinking and, you know, our power of suggestion. I do feel that there are some companies out there that truly believe in their product and do have good intentions, but I don't think that we still don't know the exact ramifications that and how everybody is going to react to that device. So I have clients that will say, I used X, Y, and Z product mm-hmm. and I felt worse. And then someone else will say, I used that exact product and I felt better. Well, okay. I mean, what are we supposed to do with that? You know, yeah. So maybe it's a big fat maybe.
Okay. Well, that's reasonable. And I've been using something called air tubes when I plug my headphones into, to listen to music. Is that something that's reasonable? It's to mitigate?
Yeah, absolutely. The air tubes are great. For some people, I don't know, it might decrease the sound quality a little bit. I think that they're fine. They are good because, you know, you've got a wire going mm-hmm. two-thirds of the way maybe, and then it stops and it's just a hollow tube mm-hmm. so that you don't have any, you know, no electric fields, no magnetic fields, no radio frequency or anything. So yes, I think those are definitely a good option.
Excellent. And I just wanted to confirm, when you're using an Ethernet, there is no electromagnetic radiation from that, is there?
There's not going to be any radio frequency. However, you can get a little bit of what we call dirty electricity riding on that wire, which is, you know, I kind of alluded to earlier that, you know, we could talk about grounding that Ethernet cord, but it gets pretty complicated. So it's definitely better to do this, but for a very sensitive person, mm-hmm. they might actually have some symptoms if they're next to the cord itself. So the best thing is to try to configure your workstation where the cord is not right next to you. And if you really want to do it properly, hire a consultant so they can confirm if there's any of these fields riding on that wire, and then they can help you ground it properly.
That's a good idea. You know, time goes so quickly, but I want to make sure people know how to reach your website, reach you for your help. And you also, you run like courses too, do you not?
Yes, I've got several courses out there and they are listed on my website. I do have a course on how to actually hardwire the internet. So it's about maybe an hour long course. It's, I don't know, $20 or something. Mm-hmm. And it teaches you exactly the steps that you need to do to wire it with all of the variables. So that can be really helpful for people. I also have a sleep course, which goes into air quality. It goes into blood sugar balancing and, you know, eating properly. It goes into the EMF, all the things that we talked about today. For people that are dealing with sleep issues, because the environment is a huge piece of that. And then I've got a mold course as well. And the mold course is about how to properly remediate, because most people aren't actually, once they have the mold in the house, they're not fixing it properly. And they're going to continue to be sick because they aren't addressing it to where they're actually getting rid of the mold. So I've got all of those listed on my website, which is Whole Home and Body Health. So if anybody wants to check those out.
You know, I'd love to have you come back for that mold remediation, because it's just so that's a Wild West, it seems. Like they just paint over stuff, mm-hmm. or they take down a wall and that's it. But it's bigger picture than that, isn't it?
Oh, it's so much more involved. And that is, there's so much fraud in that industry. I don't know why it attracts so much deception. But yes, someone, a remediator will charge you several thousand dollars to come mm-hmm. in and use their magic chemical or their magic spray and call it good. And they did nothing. And they might've made the situation worse. So it is, there's a lot to learn and a lot to know about how to make it, you know, bring your house back to a normal ecology.
I would love it if you'd come back and talk about that. I think that's a huge topic here everywhere, but especially in the South. It's a big deal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For sure. Love to.
Well, I want to thank you again for joining me. Always, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise, you too.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.